Thank you. My name's Ruth. I'm one of the pastors here. I'd like to offer a very warm welcome to you. We're in week two of our series, Adventures in Happiness. There are discussion materials available, so if you didn't get those last week, there are some copies out in the commons. They're also available online at our website and through the app, so I would encourage you to grab one of those. And if you're not in a group and would like to be in one, there's information in your bulletin about how you can join a group, or you ask at Cedar Ridge in 7 minutes at the end. We'd love to get you in with a group. If you're not in a group and that doesn't work for you, get together with a friend and read through the material. I think it'll help you get a little bit more out of this series. So, Adventures in Happiness. I like the word happiness. I know that actually a lot of people don't seem to like that word, I found. I think they think it sounds very frivolous, and entomologically speaking, they're actually kind of right. According to what's this guy's name? Darren McMahon, in his book, Happiness History, he found that it's a striking fact that in every Indo-European language, without exception, going all the way back to ancient Greek, the word for happiness is a cognate with the word for luck. So happiness is related to luck. You know, maybe we're born with a sunny disposition, or we're born into a relatively loving and stable home, or we have access to education, or it's a sunny day, or, you know, whatever it might be, there seems to be a large element of luck to whether or not we feel happy. But I do think also, in addition to that, there is an element of choice. We all know that there are people living with everything. You look and you think, wow, you're famous, you're rich, you've got everything, and yet they're unhappy. And we also know that there are people that seem to have nothing and yet seem to have a great deal of happiness. I worked for a number of years in refugee camps, and I always used to carry in my pocket a number of balloons. And it never ceased to amaze me when I would go to a refugee camp and blow up a balloon, how the kids would just come alive. You know, they'd been through incredible, unspeakable horror. They were living in squalor, and yet the sight of a balloon would just, wow, they were laughing and joking, running and playing. Not every time, I have to say. When you do that and children don't respond, then there's something, wow, something's really, really traumatic and horrible. But usually, kids will just be happy in the moment. So I think there is an element of choice. What do we focus on? Do we focus on the balloon or on the squalor of the refugee camp? The word happiness also carries a sense of being fleeting. You know, it's not a very permanent state. You know, as our luck changes, our feelings of happiness change. And I think I like the word happiness precisely because of that, sense that happiness is a gift and it's there in the moment, and you've got to seize it in the moment and enjoy it in the moment, because it is fleeting and it will be gone. I don't know if you've ever played video games. I don't play a lot of them very often, but my youngest son loves video games. And there are a lot of games where you seem to be running along and things will appear, like coins or jewels or stuff, and you've got to grab them while you run past because they disappear. And happiness feels a little bit like that to me. It's one of those things, you've got to seize it in the moment if you want to get it. And it builds up your, you know, in the games, it builds up your strength and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of think happiness is a little bit like that. Something seems to light up in us when we get those lucky, happy moments. It's as though we're hardwired for it. And I think we are. I think we are created to want to be happy and to be happy. And we talked about that a little bit last week. If you missed the message last week, it is available online. The Bible actually has quite a lot to say about happiness. It's easy to miss, though, because the word for happy can be translated other ways. And in the Bible, it's generally translated as blessed or be glad or be joyful. You know, things that seem, you know, a little bit more serious and a little bit more maybe appropriate for the Bible than happy. But actually that word also can equally be translated happy. So just looking at a very few out of a lot of different verses that exhort us to be happy. Here in Psalm 40, may all those who seek you, seek God, be happy and rejoice in you. Another psalm says, shout triumphantly to the Lord, all the earth. Be happy, rejoice out loud, sing your praises. Think from the prophets, be happy and full of joy because the Lord has done a wonderful thing. Even the Beatitudes, we're used to saying, blessed are those. But it can equally say, happy. Happy are people who show mercy because they will receive mercy. Happy are people who have pure hearts, etc. And I think there's one more from Paul, one of the early church leaders, when he was actually in prison, saying, you should be happy and full of joy with me. So there are lots and lots of verses about be happy because of who God is and what God has done. We should be happy. Thomas Watson, a 17th century Puritan, preacher and author, said that this, God has no design upon us but to make us happy. Who should be cheerful if not the people of God? This was a 17th century Puritan. Not people that were known for their like giddy, you know, excitable ways, but he says that we should be happy. Similarly, the 19th century British preacher Charles Spurgeon, who was also not really known for his giddiness, he had debilitating gout, suffered from a severe depression for most of his life. But he said this, those who are beloved of the Lord must be the most happy and joyful people to be found anywhere upon the face of the earth. Are we? why would they say that? Why should we be happy? Well, for one thing, we follow Jesus. And Jesus was someone who it seems was, for most of the time, happy. People wanted to be around Jesus. Jesus was fun to have at a party. Jesus laughed and joked and loved to celebrate. Jesus trusted God completely. He wasn't weighed down with worrying about the day-to-day things of life, about what to eat, what to drink. We're followers of Jesus, and we want to have that same attitude. We want to have that same happiness that Jesus seemed to display. Now, obviously, we're not always happy. Sorrow and suffering are very real parts of life, as they were for Jesus. Jesus got angry. Jesus got frustrated. Jesus was very grieved at times and just outright sad. You know, there was great sorrow. And we looked last week at how sorrow and joy actually are interconnected. Joy is sometimes in some ways dependent on sorrow. It can be essential. They go together. Sadness helps us to feel empathy for other people. Sadness helps us to think about changing. You know, it can be a motivator for change. It can be a trigger for us to think about, oh, something is not right here. I need to take time and look at what's going on. So sadness can be something that's very important. It's you know, we have in our vision here at Cedar Ridge that we want to take time to address the roots of our anxieties and pain. We don't want to, you know, ignore or bury our sadness or try and pretend that we're something we're not. We want to listen to it. And so, again, if you missed the message last week, I would recommend looking at that. But I want to reiterate that although this series is on happiness, no one should ever feel that they need to pretend to be happy. And I say that as someone who has struggled for many years with depression. There have been times in my life when I found it extremely difficult, if not impossible, to really find anything to feel happy about at that time. In fact, I have a button on my bag. I only have one button on my bag. My button says, it's okay to not be okay. So no one should feel any kind of pressure to put on a happy face. Certainly not here, not in our community. We don't want to fake it. Sadness is real. It has great value sometimes. Sometimes it's just something we have to get through and deal with. But we want to be a community that is there for one another in all of our times of sadness. But at the same time, I don't think that sadness is our purpose in life. I think it's natural and good to want to be happy. I think we're created to be happy. We are all created in the divine image. We read that in Genesis 1. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. We're created to share God's likeness. And God is a God of joy, of happiness. I think that's shown in a number of different aspects of God. Among other things, God is clearly creative. And we, created in God's image, are also created to be creative. But that creativity will look different for all of us. I love street art. I just think it's fabulous. It's not always the art itself that's particularly complicated it's not the technique or anything. It's just that fun way of seeing the world from a different angle. I think we have a few pictures of some fun little street art. I love that. Oh, that's great. Next one. Cute. And I think we've got a third one. So it's just like a fun way of looking at the world, right? I love it. But that's not my creativity. I couldn't do that. I think it's awesome, but I couldn't do that. But we all have creativity in us. We may express it in kind of weird ways. You know, the stories we tell our kids, or the songs we sing in the shower, or the way we arrange the things on our desk, or, you know, the way we cook, or whatever it is, we all have different ways of expressing our creativity. So I think creativity is really a reflection of God that's unique to each of us, the different ways that we create. And that is a way of expressing happiness and generating happiness. So what else is God like in addition to creative? I think we have. So God also has a sense of humor, I think. Just look at the giraffe. Tell me that's not funny. It's funny. You especially if you're out, you know, and you see them in the wild and they just walk past. I mean, they're funny. Or the ostrich. The ostrich is funny. You got to say. So people have thought that God had a sense of humor from the look of the animals for thousands of years. We read this in the book of Job. The ostrich flaps her wings futilely, all those beautiful feathers, but useless. She lays her eggs on the hard ground, leaves them there in the dirt, exposed to the weather, not caring that they might get stepped on and cracked or trampled by some wild animal. She's negligent with her young as if they weren't even hers. She cares nothing about anything. She wasn't created very smart, that's for sure. Wasn't given her share of good sense. But when she runs, oh, how she runs, laughing, leaving horse and rider in the dust. Our sense of humor, like our creativity, I think reflects a divine characteristic, but it's also something that's pretty unique to each of us. It varies by age. I read a study recently that said kids in the U.S. laugh on average 400 times daily. 400 times. Adults, 15. Oh, it's a bit of a shame, right? Maybe we should make more toilet jokes or something. I don't know. Kids laugh all the time. Humor also varies by culture. I used to live in Sierra Leone, and the people there were fabulous people, really happy people. They loved to laugh, and they loved stories. And I remember at a dinner party, but their sense of humor, I have to say, was weird. To me, I thought their sense of humor was weird. But I remember I was at a dinner party, and I told this joke, got to the punchline, and everybody laughed. And then there was this kind of awkward pregnant pause, and they kind of looked at me, and they said, "And then?" It was the end of the joke, so I was like, so then they all went home and had tea. They all laughed again, you know, because they're a storytelling culture, so you got to finish the story, then you can laugh, you know. But I don't know why I told this story, but anyway, humor, as you can see, is unique to each of us. And to some extent, it's culture-driven, but also it's not. So, you know, sometimes we meet someone who is from our own culture, but they don't seem to have a sense of humor. And you can often spot that really quickly, right? It seems like something is missing. Like there's something missing. Because I think we are created to have a sense of humor. We're created to find life fun and to laugh and to enjoy things, find things funny. We're also created to experience beauty. In Genesis, we read that God looked at every aspect of creation and said, "It is good." Jesus is recorded in Matthew's gospel as saying this: "See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these." I imagine Jesus kind of holding up a flower when he said that. I think flowers are beautiful. They're so varied. I pretty much always have one or two flowers on my desk here at work. I love them. I think, particularly the fact that they are fleeting, that they're here today and they are gone tomorrow. So you gotta soak in that beauty while it lasts. Again, we all have a pretty unique sense of what is beautiful. I mean, there's some things that many, many of us find beautiful. But there are also things that we don't necessarily, you know, that are more unique to us. I had a good friend years ago who was an architect, and we'd be walking along, and he'd suddenly stop and say, "Oh, look at that, isn't it beautiful?" Some archway or some way that the bricks were connected. I don't know. I didn't really see it as being particularly beautiful, but for him, it was like, wow, it's so beautiful. My eldest son is a punk. You may know that. He loves punk music. Initially, I didn't really see what was so beautiful about punk music for the first year or two, maybe. but even now, I can see that certain sub-genres of punk have got a certain artistry and do certain things. And there is beauty to be found in weird places, you know, if we have eyes to see it. So I think our appreciation of beauty is also something that's pretty personal, pretty unique to each of us, and yet is a reflection of a divine characteristic. The happiness of God, I think, is also shown through relationships. We've talked previously many times about how God is not an individual, but is a community. God is in relationship. God is pictured sometimes as a divine dance, the dance of the persons of the Trinity. And God calls us into relationship, into that divine dance, because God delights in us. We read in Zephaniah, one of my favorite verses in the book, in the Bible, the Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. God delights in us. God calls us friends. That's an amazing thing, isn't it? It's always an honor to be called someone's friend, but God calls us friends. Jesus says to his followers in John 15, I no longer call you servants because a servant doesn't know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Jesus says he's sharing everything with them. He wants them to know because they're his friends. Happiness and friendship often go very closely together. And we're actually going to come back to this topic in particular in week four of this series. And then finally on my list, I think God's happiness is shown through rest. Now, God doesn't get tired, of course. God doesn't need rest. And yet God is portrayed in the Bible as taking rest, taking time to just stop and enjoy the beauty of creation, to enjoy life. And we are created to rest, not rest so that we can recharge and get back and get productive, but to take time out and just to really enjoy life, enjoy living. So I think all of these things demonstrate different aspects of the happiness of God, and the happiness that we as people made in God's image also are created to reflect, but in unique ways. We're all made uniquely. We all experience those different aspects of happiness uniquely. We are unique in our relationship with God, too. Think about that for a moment. Nobody knows God quite the way you do. Isn't that amazing? The book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, is pretty weird book. It's written in a style, apocryphal writing, that's a very stylistic kind of way of looking at the end of time. And it's hard for us to understand because we don't really have that culture of that writing in our culture anymore. But there's a verse in Revelation where Christ addresses a church in ancient Greece called Pergamon, the city of Pergamon, and he says this: to the one who is victorious, I will give some of the hidden manna. I'll also give that person a white stone with a new name written on it, known only to the one who receives it. Again, it's hard to know exactly what this means, and commentators are split as to, well, what is this name? Is it a name of God that only the person receiving knows? Is it a name of the recipient that's only known between them and God? We don't really know, but this seems to suggest that we have a unique relationship with God. Each one of us has an experience of God that is unique to us. I think that's really cool. But we're not only individuals, we're also a community. And I don't think maybe that we've been given this stone with a unique name just so that we can, you know, hoard it to ourselves and feel pretty good about ourselves. I think it's rather to share it. We contribute our perspectives of God, our experiences of God, with the community as a whole. By bringing our unique insights into God, we create a unique community and we know more of God. Obviously, that's true of every church community. The verse we just read from Revelation was to one church in the city of Pergamon. But there were messages to six other churches, and they're all quite distinct because church communities are quite distinct. So what's distinctive about our community, Cedar Ridge, in terms of our approach and maybe our identity? We could do a whole series on that, no doubt. But I just want to look at four things. None of these are new to us. We've talked about them many times, so I'm just going to go over them very quickly. You can see them here. The first is a focus on the kingdom of God. Our vision, which we heard in the video at the beginning of the message, and you see on our website, it's out in the commons. It's not about making our church big and successful, right? It's not about making really great services that we can enjoy and you know, all those things are nice. It's not like we don't want them, but that's not the priority for us. The priority for us is to dare to dream of heaven on earth. It's about seeking first the kingdom of God, bringing God's healing and reconciling love into our homes, our workplaces, our neighborhoods. That's not to say, obviously, that we don't care about this church here where we're gathered. Of course, we do. We want it to be a place where we can all grow, where people can come and can experience God and search, you know, search, explore about life, about spirituality, and so on. But it's not just about what happens in these four walls. We really want to be a community that reaches out to others outside of here to love and to serve and to make the world a better place. Second, whole of life discipleship. Our view of discipleship, our view of following Jesus, impacts everything, or hopefully we would like it to impact everything we do, everything. It's not just what we believe. It's about how we live our daily lives, how we spend our money, how we engage in relationships, how we think about our work, how we use our time, how we engage in political debates, how we do everything. There's no part of life that's, oh, well, that's kind of private, and then following Jesus is the rest of the time. Following Jesus is our whole journey. It's also a journey that, you know, we're all on. Nobody's arrived. Nobody's made it. We're all journeying together in discipleship. The third thing is authenticity. Just as none of us have arrived, none of us has got all the answers. We all have doubts. We all have questions. We all have things that we don't understand. And we want to be honest about that. We want to be humble and recognize that we all have got something to learn and to learn from each other and from other communities. Also, we're not trying, actually, to solve it all. We realize God is so much bigger than all our ideas about God. Mystery is something to be embraced rather than something to solve. And we're fine with that. And then fourthly, obviously, this again, this is not like a definitive list. You won't find this on our website as this is Cedar Ridge. But, you know, these are some of the things that I think do make us a little bit distinctive. Fourthly, inclusivity, diversity, and acceptance. We want to be inclusive and accepting of everyone, no matter their age, ethnicity, beliefs, gender, sexuality, personality type, etc. God loves us in all our beautiful diversity. And in fact, that diversity better reflects God than if we were a more homogenous community. At the same time, don't want to just paper over the cracks and pretend we're all the same. We actually want to engage in safe space, or maybe a better phrase is brave space, where we come together and we are honest and we learn from each other and we engage with each other. So those, I think, are four things that are distinctive of Cedar Ridge. Now, obviously, none of these are unique to us. There are other church communities out there that will have some or all of these. But I think that these are things that distinguish us from many of the churches around us. Because there are so many different churches that we could go to, right? So why have we chosen Cedar Ridge, this community, as our home? The factors that go into that will not just be our identity and our values. There may be many reasons that we choose to commit to a particular community. In fact, let's see how one couple makes that decision about where to go to church.
Nick and Molly just moved to the city and can't agree on what they want. They are young and energetic and looking for a new church home. We'll take some personality tests, tour the sites, ask some questions, and based on taste, experience, and location, we'll find them the perfect congregation. I'm Corey Clark, and welcome to Church Hunters.
We're so excited to find a church. We just started dating.
With the churches we go to now, just not, like, for us, just not really doing it for us, you know?
Right. I go to a satellite campus. I just find it hard to connect emotionally with a video screen. It's just...
Okay, you cried during Cake Boss. So, like, we've been doing a lot of services online, a lot of podcasts. There are a lot of preachers we do like.
Really good, but we want serious yet funny.
Yeah, like commanding of the stage yet relatable, you know?
We're more looking for the humor of Andy Stanley with the body of Stephen Furtick.
Hey, guys.
What's happening?
I'm Corey.
Good to see you. My name's Nick. This
hey,
is Molly.
Hey, guys. Welcome to Church Hunters.
This is your first church. This is Creekside First Baptist. So while it is traditional, it's still pretty current. This year, the pastor started untucking his shirts.
Oh, wow. That's good.
Big deal.
He does dress his age, though, so don't worry. He's past the Osteen suit phase, but he hasn't gone full Giglio yet.
Okay, so he's holes in the knees or no?
Well, it's frayed, but no holes.
Frayed? No. Okay, got it. Yeah. Perfect. Okay.
So, hey, let me show you around. Okay,
right, let's
come on.
Do it.
I do love this lobby.
It's a great lobby. You know, it's not too big, not too small. Yeah. It should be enough
enough room to catch up, chat with your friends.
That's all you need.
But here's a great thing. There's a bunch of side exits, so if you need to leave early and catch the game, you can do that.
Got it. Yeah. Yes. Wow. Honestly, right up front, didn't love the name.
No. First Baptist? Who names a church that anymore?
Not these days. We're looking for like a Thrive Church, maybe Relevant Church, I don't know, Radiant Church, something.
This is the soundboard they use here. Okay. Now remember, it's pretty traditional here. So when Sunday comes around, they turn it way down low.
Got it. Yeah.
But the one knock on this church, they still use the child care numbering system on the screens.
Ooh, for the
Or as the moms like to call it, the sanctuary walk of shame.
The Sunday morning experience was just a little too traditional for us.
For us. I mean, the pastor's main point, 157 characters. I can't tweet that.
I really think you guys are going to love this place.
I like
it. We do. We like it. Yeah.
You know, it's diverse, but it's not like too diverse, you know?
Scripture-heavy sermons?
Yeah.
What about, is it community-oriented?
Absolutely.
Great.
Women in ministry?
The parking situation, you guys got to see it. Super rare nowadays. Come with me.
It's like a maybe for when my parents come into town for a church for Christmas. Easter type of church.
Like a holiday type church.
One of the main reasons that I love this church for you guys is that on your personality test, Molly, you scored high in service and hospitality.
Oh, babe.
And there's a great welcome team you could join.
Perfect. Okay.
And then Nick, you scored really high in need for accountability.
Wow.
And the men's groups here are amazing.
You're just going to put that out there?
Hey,
just
God
like
knows
that?
Your heart, okay? On the next episode of Church Hunters. I think you're really going to love this place. They take relevance to a whole new level. This church identifies as inter-non-denominational. This pastor speaks out of a brand new translation. It's the Tumblr Bible.
Okay, that was a bit silly. But I think it is worthwhile to stop and think, why Cedar Ridge? Why do we come here? Why have we chosen to be part of this community? There are distinctive characteristics of our identity that we just looked at, but there are other reasons. We have friends here. We are engaged in ministries that really mean a lot to us. They are, you know, our kids maybe enjoy it if we have kids, or we like the look and feel of the place, or, you know, maybe it's convenient, or maybe it's just better than that last church we were at. You know, we all have many reasons. But the reason this video, of course, is so silly is that the couple is so overt about being consumers, right? They want what works for them, what doesn't. When in reality, we don't choose a community. We become part of a community. We are the community. We are Cedar Ridge. We are our community. We bring our unique perspectives, our unique experiences of God, and together we form a unique community. There's no church that's just like us. None. And our church will not be the same if each of us are not part of it. So we all get to play a role in being Cedar Ridge. And some roles are very obvious and they're very visible, and others less so. If you play an instrument or if you're up here on the stage, then you know, obviously that's a very visible role. More visible than the people who make the coffee, for example. But how much do we love the people who make the coffee? I know I could not get through my Sunday without them. So, but we have many, many people, so many people. I think this is fabulous about our community, so many people serving in so many ways, in ways that most people don't even know about, that just kind of keeps things going. We also have lots of great examples of people not just serving in roles that already exist, but looking and seeing a need and going out and filling it. You know, Caroline's work with Sophia's House, something that is great, going out and working with a shelter that we've been able to get behind. Marianne's work with the birthday books. One example that's relatively new that you might not be aware of is Jennifer Anderson, who's there and who has offered to come up very bravely. Jennifer has saw a need and did something about it. So, Jennifer, why don't you tell us what that was?
So, Paul and I, Paul is my husband, who's over there. We have two little kids, Marcus and Matthew. They're 3 and 5. And something that we've experienced over the past 5 years is that kids are wonderful, and they're also kind of isolating from the church. So we can't attend very many events because they're bedtime. It's hard to be part of a D group. We've kind of made it work by like hosting at our house for a while, or one of us going, or taking turns and stuff. But it's difficult. So we found that like as the kids have gotten a little, even as they've gotten older, it's been hard to connect. And then when we do come on a Sunday, like some kid is crying, and so we're mostly out in the foyer chasing a little guy or something like that. So. We're just kind of feeling more and more isolated from other people in the church, and we started thinking about what we might be able to do that would kind of fix that. And so one place that we found we've made a lot of connections when we've had kids is the playground, because the kids are busy. You're with the kids, but they're busy, and you can kind of have a side conversation with other parents. And so Cedar Ridge has a playground, which not everybody knows about. And so we thought, we were just kind of asking ourselves, I wonder if we told people, hey, we're going to be at the playground. Do you want to come with your kids or without your kids if you don't have any kids? We're going to be there. Do you want to come? It turns out, yeah, people were really happy to come. So I just kind of started with what we had, which was a few email addresses of a few other parents and a few people who we knew might be interested who didn't have kids. And we've just been sending out weekly emails saying, hey, we're going to be at the playground. And it's been really awesome.
So weather permitting, you're out there every week.
Absolutely. Even today, we'll probably be out there unless it's raining right now.
You mentioned people who don't have kids.
Yeah.
Why would they want to go out there? Why would you want them there if they don't have
Well, kids? It turns out that we like people who don't have kids, too. So, Colleen has come out there, and Bill and Shoba were out there a couple weeks ago, Will and Casey, all the people who are in our small group, or our D group. But it's really just a meeting place so the kids have something to do so that we could talk. Kids are not a prerequisite to coming.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sorry, one other thing. If you do want to be on the email list, it's super informal. I just send out a weekly, hey, we're going to be there. If you're like me and need a reminder.
So they can send you an email?
Yeah.
Grab you afterwards.
Yep.
Or if you can't find Jen's email, then send me an email and I'll connect to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. I, of course, was kidding about the why would you go there if you don't have kids. Little kids are great at just reminding you about the joy of life, aren't they? I don't know if you've seen the video that went viral this week about a little Japanese girl going out into the rain in California. Maybe you didn't see that. Oh. You got to look for that. That's a good one. But mixing the generations is something that's really important to us. We learn so much from kids. We get so much joy from kids, and they from us. I think that's important. So even if you don't have kids, I'd encourage you to do that. Another way to engage, of course, intergenerationally is to join the Cedar Ridge Kids team and help teach or do activities with kids. If you're interested in that, there is a table in the Commons, too, where you can find out more and see if that's for you. So we all have parts to play, whether they're visible, whether they're less visible. C.S. Lewis said this, play great parts without pride and small parts without shame. I think that's important because actually we don't know what are great parts and which are small parts, right? I don't know about you, but I know for many people and for myself many weeks, or at least some weeks, the service is not the most important part or the most significant part for me of a Sunday morning. It's okay to admit that. We won't be offended, those of us who are doing the service. Often it's the little interactions, right? It's the catching up with someone, or it's a hug, or it's a smile, or an encouraging comment from someone. Those kind of things can be really, really significant. It's not just kind of the formal things. Just to give you an example, someone from Cedar Ridge sent me a card a while ago with a kind, encouraging message. But there were words that she had used which really connected for me with a very painful situation that was ongoing that she had no idea about at all and still doesn't, you know. But It really felt to me like that was from God. I carried that note around with me for weeks and read it dozens and dozens of times. That was something that God used to bring healing to me that she would never know about. And I just want to encourage us, because I think all of us do little things. Smile at someone, or give a hug, or give a greeting, or challenge someone even. Say those little things, and it actually makes a huge difference. It's part of being in community with one another. And I think it would be lovely to share some of those stories, of those little interactions that actually have had big impacts, because often we don't get a chance to share those. And so we're going to have a little time with an open mic, and anyone who'd like to can share some examples of things that have happened that in our community that have actually been really important. And I did ask Ginger if she would kick us off, and she's very bravely said yes.
Good morning. My husband and I have been, our family has been coming to Cedar Ridge for, I think, close to 15 years, and this past year was especially challenging for us. John required open heart surgery, and we found out about a year ago. So the days leading up to his surgery were pretty stressful and full of anxiety for all of us. I can't look at you guys. we received so much love and encouragement from so many people in this community. And one of the very touching things that my D group did was to gather in prayer during John's surgery. And I know that was quite a sacrifice for them. John's surgery was scheduled for 7 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. So it was, a sacrifice for them to gather together. And that was an extremely difficult day all around. But the support that we received was just kind of like a hug from God for all of us during that day. And we're just very grateful for that.
Thank you. Does anybody else have an example that they'd like to share?
After the surgery that I had, it was, I guess, a couple months later that somebody in the church came up after the service and said to me, can I give you a hug? Because I just found out that you're the John I've been praying for.
Aww.
And that really touched me. So.
So this also happened about a year ago. A member of our congregation, Joe Bell, passed away, and his daughters got incorporated into our family. So the Cedar Ridge family was super, super supportive, and I can't express how grateful that my wife and I are for all the love and support that this family has given our family. So, yeah, thank you all.
Yeah, Cedar Ridge was amazing for us too. We, my wife and I, took in three kids, kind of a surprise. And, you know, we're both in our 50s and the kids are 4, 2, and 1. It was pretty tough. And many members of the church for weeks brought us tons of food, clothing, babysitting, and lots and lots of prayers, phone calls, emails, emotional support. It was remarkable. So thanks to all of you.
Jeff's mom passed away a couple months back, and it was really hard. And just like we all go through hard things, and I was like, I'm not in a small group, and I know a bunch of people around here, but I didn't know how to tell people, and I just kind of stood in the back and cried a couple of Sundays. But I felt like that was okay here. And I love that there's that acceptance. And there are people who had us over for dinner, brought us food, sent us flowers, prayed for us. Just so many people, and just sent me an email to say, I'm thinking about you. I knew something was wrong. Like, just so many people reached out. And that kind of community and support is just something that I want to be a part of, giving back. But also, I'm just very thankful to so many people who supported us.
Thank you so much to everybody who shared. I really appreciate that. So during the response time, in just a few minutes, I want to encourage us to think about the question of what I love about this community is, why do we come here? Why be part of this community? Because we don't just come, we are part of that. We are the community. And to think about that, make that part of your response time today, write out, there are some post-it notes, and you can just write something that matters to you and stick it up as a way of kind of really thinking through, why am I here? And why might this be somewhere that I want to invite other people into as well? I want to close out this part of the service with a challenge, and there are kind of three parts to this challenge. First, I want to really encourage all of us to show up. It really makes a difference. You might think, well, I'm not serving today, or I'm not doing anything. It doesn't really matter whether I come or not. It does. You might be the reason somebody goes home and says, wow, I really feel that I experienced God today because somebody gave me a hug, or somebody said hi to me, or somebody talked to me during the seat and greet, or, you know, whatever. You could be the reason. You could be bringing God to somebody this week. So bring your uniqueness, bring your perspectives on God, your experience of God to form our community. It does matter. And obviously showing up is not just about Sunday mornings. This is the main time we meet together, but also in our groups or showing up individually for one another. Secondly, engage. We're not consumers. We're not like that couple that's doing church hunters. We are participants. We are stakeholders. We are owners of this community. We're hosts to newcomers. So let's all get involved. Let's all find ways to play our part, however big or small, however visible or not so visible that might be. And let's also reach out to others. Let's step outside of our comfort zone and encourage one another. Let's give those hugs, give those smiles, offer to pray for one another. Let's reach out to others here in our church community, people that we don't know, as well as reaching out into our neighborhoods and other places to invite people in. And let's be there for one another. Let's be there either inviting people here or inviting people into our homes, inviting people to be part of community with us, our neighbors, our coworkers, our friends, etc. We're going to take communion now. Now, communion is all about sharing. That's what the word means, sharing in the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus, sharing our lives with one another, being a community together, created around our desire to follow Jesus. So as we take communion today, I'd really encourage you to look at one another and to smile at one another and to realize that what we are sharing, Jesus' life, Jesus' love is for all of us, and we're sharing it together. We're in this together. We get to do this together. So let's pray together the words on the screen. We come together to remember you, Jesus, your body that was broken, your love that flows out to each one of us. We come together to celebrate you, Jesus. We are your body, your hands and your feet, sharing your love with one another and the world. Amen. So this is a time to respond.